Welcome back, 417, 730 a.m., 102.9 FM, WTNT, Andy Parks, live from the Washington Times. I saw a wisp of white smoke come up over the Capitol a short while ago, and that means Stephen Diamond is ready to come on the air. I think that's what that means. I'm not quite sure, but anyway.
Stephen the First.
Stephen the First joins me. How are you, Stephen?
I'm fine.
All right. EPA email. I want to start with that. The goal was shaming states into compliance?
Yeah. So this, you know, we've talked a bit about some of these other EPA emails. There's been a number of different investigations trying to get at what these investigators, both here in Congress and some outside groups, think are a treasure trove of emails that would explore EPA's policies overall. You know, there's a belief among a number of Republicans on Capitol Hill and probably a lot of Americans that EPA is antagonistic towards American energy production.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so one of the avenues is to get a hold of the internal emails and see what the discussions are there. And these are some of the latest emails that we've seen. These come out of Senator David Vitter, who's the top Republican on the Environment and Public Works Committee in the Senate. And so one of the emails, sure enough, as you said, it's a guy who ran one of EPA's regions. The country's divided into a number of different regions. This region is sort of the Gulf Coast region. Your listeners may remember him. He was the guy who had to resign last year after another senator had pointed out the 2010 speech when he said that his goal was to crucify oil and gas companies who ran afoul of laws.
Yep,
and so
right.
He had to resign. Anyway, finally, this committee got a hold of some of his other emails, and those emails showed in one of the emails he talked about how proud he was of having been able to, basically an effort, shaming states into complying with what EPA, or he in particular, wanted them to do. And a couple of other emails they obtained, all of which Senator Vitter says confirm this anti-energy bias at EPA, basically a war on energy interests in the country.
Mm-hmm. This was this guy, Armin Deres, or whatever his name was. I remember talking about him.
I avoided pronouncing it because
I don't know
how to pronounce it.
No, I understand. but there's a link between him and, I guess, the assistant, soon-to-be director of the EPA, if Barack Obama gets his way, Gina McCarthy?
Yeah, and that's the key thing here. Lisa Jackson was the Environmental Protection Agency administrator. She resigned earlier this year. She actually resigned in the middle of questions over her having used a secondary address, Richard Windsor, which we've talked about in the past.
Right.
The secondary address. The investigators all think that she was using that in order to try and circumvent open records laws. Last week, we actually learned of another regional administrator, similar to the guy that we were talking about a minute ago, Armin Zaris, or however you pronounce his name, another guy who was a regional director who also was using, he wasn't just using an email, an alias within the agency, he was using his own private email at me.com, which I think is a Mac address,
sure,
actually.
Yeah.
He was using that to do business, even though he had signed an affidavit saying that he'd only done that once for a scheduling matter. New emails that were released last week that showed, no, actually, it's a lot deeper than that. He actually resigned abruptly. I think it was a month ago or so. He resigned abruptly just as this sort of stuff was about the, you know, was getting going. So the question of these emails goes throughout there, and as you just said a minute ago, some of the newer emails have gone back and forth to Ms. McCarthy, who, as you said, is President Obama's nominee to fill Lisa Jackson's position at the top of EPA. All of this will come up absolutely when she comes up for her confirmation hearing, and basically all these stories and all the releases of the emails are a way of priming this issue and letting everybody know when these confirmation hearings happen, EPA is going to have to explain, first of all, what their policy has been on private emails, because there have been a lot of reports. All of that is contrary to the law. Using private emails breaks the law, and it shields information the public should be able to see. Public and congressional investigators should be able to see. She's going to have to explain on behalf of EPA what in the world is going on over there with this information and with emails and sort of the email policies, or else she may not get confirmed. And so it's going to be a major battle. You know, we've seen battles with Chuck Hagel. We've seen lesser battles with some of the other nominees. I suspect that if EPA doesn't get this email situation cleared up, she will be another one.
All right. So David Vitter, obviously, he represents Louisiana and has a great deal of interest in oil and gas production. But there's another guy, Lamar Smith of Texas, who is also asking some questions of his own. What's that about?
Right. So, Lamar Smith. So David Vitter is the top Republican on the Environment Public Works Committee in the Senate.
Right.
Lamar Smith is the top Republican. He's actually the chairman of the House Science Committee, which also has some oversight of EPA through EPA's science. And so he's doing an investigation into those same sorts of emails, and he actually wants to get a look at emails that he says would explore how EPA is using science to inform, or in some cases apparently maybe not to inform, its decision. So he's doing his own investigation, and there are actually, I think there are at least two other committees that have also weighed in on these emails and are trying to get at these emails. There's also an independent researcher, a guy named Chris Horner, who's the one who first revealed the Richard Windsor email alias for Lisa Jackson last year, and he's the guy who's actually getting a lot of these emails, because he's the guy who's gone through the Freedom of Information Act requests and is forcing them to produce them, and so the EPA is producing them to him in these big giant tranches of email at one a month, and those are also going to the committee. So that's why there's so much information trickling out, and it's going to all these different places. But as you said, there are at least there are several different congressional investigations going on. This independent investigator, Chris Horner, who's keeping tabs on all of this, and we're about to see it all blow up if and when McCarthy ever actually gets her confirmation hearing.
I got you. All right, now, I want to move on to something else that I saw posted on our website, WashingtonTimes.com, a short while ago, and it's a story by you. Senate Democrats join push to cut Obama's illegal immigrant advocate. What's this all about?
So there's a policy or a position that the Obama administration created last year, the ICE Public Advocate, and ICE stands for Immigration and Customs Enforcement. That's the main interior arm of immigration enforcement. They handle deportations and detentions. They're the guys who just released the immigrants over the last month or so in order to meet the sequesters, and drew all that attention and criticism for that. A year ago, they were involved in They can't win. The folks on the right say that they aren't detaining enough people and aren't deporting quickly enough, and the folks on the left say they're detaining too many people and going after illegal immigrants who the left says shouldn't be gone after in the first place. ICE is caught in the middle. Last year, in the middle of that criticism of how detentions were going, Obama created this position of ICE public advocate. Republicans on Capitol Hill basically said that's the illegal immigrant advocacy position. The Democrats said, no, it's very valuable because now we actually have somebody we can go to bring legitimate complaints to. The position, it's unclear how much good the position actually did, but here we are in a cost-saving measure. It's being eliminated in the spending bill that's being debated on the Senate floor right now, and that means, you know, for it to come in the Senate bill, that means that the Senate Democrats agreed to leave that in there. It was actually part of the House bill originally last year, but the House bill never went anywhere. Now, all of a sudden, in order to get this bill back through the Senate and the House this year, this continuing resolution to keep the government open, they've thrown that provision in there as a sweetener to House Republicans. But obviously, Senate Democrats are about to agree to it as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very interesting, you know, for a position that the president created and named very prominently and essentially fought for, to have Senate Democrats come and say, no, we're okay with eliminating that, is definitely a slap at the administration.
Yeah. You know, in checking out part of the story, I saw there was a comment from Tom Coburn of Oklahoma, and I love the fact that he was getting on Harry Reid, because Harry Reid basically said, we don't have time to read this.
Yeah, it's more than the bill runs to more than 500 pages. It spends $985 billion. The bill the bill was released at 9 o'clock on Monday night, and Harry Reid wanted to bring the bill up and start doing amendments as of yesterday afternoon. You know, less than 24 hours after this 500-page bill was released, and Coburn came to the floor and said, "No, I'm not going to give you consent to begin the debate until I actually get a chance to read it. And as you said, Reed blew up and said, well, you know, some people here seem to actually want to read this thing thoroughly. And Coburn came to the floor and said, yes, of course I want to read this thoroughly. I thought that was what our job was. And, you know, it's one of these classic ridiculous things that can only happen in the Senate where you have an argument over, well, are we actually going to be allowed to read what we're voting on? You know, it's also classic Senate in that here we are, you know, less than 24 hours after that, and the issue is solved. Coburn and McCain, who'd been holding it up, finished reading it at about 9 o'clock last night, came up with all sorts of things that they object to in the bill, and now we'll actually have a bunch of amendments to eliminate them and see if they pass.
You know, I know she's in the other body, but boy, this brings back memories of Nancy Pelosi. You know, we got to pass it to find out what's in it.
There's not a person who heard Harry Reid who didn't make that connection. That's exactly the impression that you were left with. And it's sort of, you know, wherever you are on the issue of the spending, those are the sorts of things that make everybody upset. It's, well, wait. I thought the whole point was to know what was in the bills, because otherwise we end up doing stuff we don't agree with.
Yeah, and I love the fact that Coburn pointed out, this is why we're $17 trillion in debt.
Yeah.
Great stuff. All right, Stephen, thank you very much for your help. Stephen the First, Washington Times political editor. Thanks. See you later.
Bless you.
Bye. 4:28, 7:30 a.m., 102.9 FM, WTNT. It's Andy Parks live from the Washington Times.